Whenever I speak before groups, I'm reminded, I ran for Congress when I was 25 years old. I ran out of law school. I was here in law school. I was going home every week to campaign to do the exploratory work. My friend Mo and others would help me with keeping notes in class because I'd leave on Wednesday and come back on Sunday night. I did it for about 25 weeks. And I got lucky. If you ever run for office, it doesn't hurt to have your dad as your predecessor in Congress if you decide to run, or your mom for that matter. And I had a dad who was my predecessor. I had a tough race. Faced a lot of local political currents and winds, but I never forget when I announced, shortly after I came back to school to take my exams and finish up, which was, I announced it Saturday before Easter in 96. Flew back here, spent a week or so getting ready for exams, took exams and finished about 10, 11 days before graduation, which I flew back home and kept doing exploratory work I was doing to get, kept doing the campaigning I was doing. Flew back, graduated on May 11th, flew back that night to Memphis. And walked in my headquarters, my campaign staff had a nice little graduation party for me. And the next morning I was waiting for all of the invitations to come and speak before various groups. I was hoping to be invited to speak before business organizations, labor organizations, political organizations, neighborhood organizations, civil rights groups, women's groups, environmental groups, all the groups that make up the constellation of political constituencies within a district. And I'm running as a Democrat and hoping that some of the Democratic clubs would invite me in the district to speak. I got not one invitation. I was able to generate excitement, Mr. Weil, in the campaign largely by just showing up where groups of people were. So if I read that somebody was coming to speak at the Ford School and this was in the district, I'd be outside shaking hands as people walked in because I hadn't been invited. I might come in and sit, but I'd leave or come back when the program was over and shake hands. I did that at grocery stores. I did it at bowling alleys. I did it at PTA meetings. I did it at church. I did it at church banquets. I did it at Wednesday night Bible service. I did it anywhere I thought there would be crowds of people. But once I announced, I assumed I would be invited to speak someplace, that I would show some, add a level of dignity to the campaign that had not existed prior. But no invitations came. It wasn't until about a week and a half in, and we started going to breakfast spots and popular lunch spots, and anywhere, again, there were big, big numbers of people. I was being criticized for thinking about running, said I was too young, that my dad was giving me a graduation gift from law school, that this was going to be my first full-time job, which it would be, and that I did not have the experience and the wherewithal and the capacity at 25 or 26 years old to be a U.S. congressman. But I just kept plugging away and plugging away and plugging away. And finally, my elementary school principal, Hattie Jackson, John Matlock, ran into my office one day. She was one of my campaign managers, the only lady to ever paddle me in school, the one time I got paddled in second grade. She came running into the office. She said, baby, she called me. She said, baby, I've got you 35 graduation speeches. And I said, Miss Jackson, I love it. I look at her. I couldn't have been more excited. It was my first set of invitations. I assume, like anybody, that it would be smart to get prepared. Debbie Dingell, I decided to go out and collect every voter registration form in the district, and I thought we'd be systematic about it. I didn't believe that we'd find them all in the public libraries because we're talking about 35 graduations. I couldn't politic, but I could certainly encourage people to register to vote, these graduating seniors, and encourage them to participate in the election, hoping that they would vote for me because I look like them. I look like I was about 10 years old when I was running, and I figured they might feel a link to me if I got up before them and talked a little bit about politics. I said, so let's run to the election commission, somebody, go to the libraries, let's order these voter registration forms and be ready. We got a few days to prepare. She looked at me, she said, baby, these aren't high school graduations. So I looked at her and said, they must be middle school. Still get the registration forms. They may have older siblings, they may have cousins, other family members. People may need change of address forms. I want to be armed and ready at these graduation speeches. She said, sweetheart, they're not middle school graduation. So I looked and said, Ms. Jackson, what have you done, sweetheart? You've gotten me 35 graduation speeches. Can I ask, what are they for? She said, baby, I got you every kindergarten graduation speech in the city of Memphis. Now, I wanted to be angry, but I had no other place to be. I had not been invited anywhere. So this was, in fact, an honor to be invited, let alone if there were 5 and 6 year olds that would comprise most of the audience. Disappointed I was, I quickly did the math and determined, Mr. Wall, there were 3 others. So I said, Ms. Jackson, what are the remaining 3 graduation speeches? You said there were 35. She said, sweetheart, I got you 3 elementary school graduation speeches as well. Again, I couldn't be angry. I frustrated. I kind of abandoned the idea of collecting all of these voter registration forms. Initially, the more I thought about it, I said, they're going to be young parents. So at least we might be able to register the parents. I start this track of doing the 35. My dad, who was in Congress, would come home and ride with me in the car to some of these events. We didn't have much money in the campaign early. All we had were a bunch of bumper stickers and fans with my name on it because it was so hot and humid in Memphis during the summertime, and a bunch of leaflets saying what I stood for, four or five planks or points that you run on a campaign. I don't know of anybody that runs with a plank saying, I'm against education, I'm against health care, I'm for nuclear wars. I mean, you all had the things that you're for that would make sense for the country. I'm riding from my 16th to 17th graduation, Dean Collins. I never forget, I was going from a school called Roselle Accelerated, which is in Midtown Memphis, to Valentine Elementary, which is in North Memphis. And my dad is in the car, and there was this local radio show, and every day this political guy would just go on and on all these negative things about me. And he went on and on every day, and I get so frustrated riding, listening to him, thinking to myself and saying to my dad, why don't we have someone call in and say something positive? Remind them that I'm not a criminal. Remind them that I can read. Remind them that I've gone to college. Just something positive, because they've said all these negative things. He said, don't do that, don't do that. He's saying that in this ride. I'm saying it's easy for him to say because they're not saying negative things about him necessarily. On and on. Finally, as we're pulling into the driveway of Valentine, it's a big hill you got to go up. We pull in, and all of a sudden this lady calls in and identifies herself as a grandmother. And says that she listens to the show every day. She said favorable things about the announcers or the DJs on the show or the hosts of the show. And said, I want you to know, I've listened to you all every day over the last several months. I've listened to you in particular over the last few weeks talk about that boy Harold Ford. And I got to tell you, I believed you until yesterday. And they jumped and said, what do you mean you believe this till yesterday? You said you listen to us all the time, you believe in us, you support us. What would make you change your mind? She said, well, yesterday I went to my grandbaby's kindergarten graduation. She said, I walked in, and there he was standing before these kids. And she goes, I was just amazed. And the man said, what do you mean you were amazed? He was speaking to kindergartners. They can't vote. The newspapers and press would start calling me the kindergarten congressman, saying that I was speaking to people that couldn't vote and so forth. She said, you know, I thought all of those things I'd read were true. She said, but I watched him. She said, he got up, he started speaking after he was introduced. And no sooner than he started speaking, every kid fell asleep. She said, but that didn't stop him. She said, he kept talking and talking and talking and talking and talking and talking. And when it was finished, he gave every one of the kids their kindergarten diploma, took pictures with the kids, took pictures with their parents and the teachers and everybody in the room in the auditorium. And the fellow said, well, what would make you want to support somebody just because they took pictures? She said, I watched him take the pictures, but it was what he did after he took the pictures. So they said, what did he do? He said, he went back in the back of the kitchen in the school, shook everybody's hand, took pictures with the kitchen staff and all the janitorial staff. And she goes, I'll never forget that, and I'm going to vote for him because of that. My dad looked at me with that kind of I told you so look on his face as we're getting ready to get out the car. I felt a little better about it. And before you know, we're getting out the car, another call comes in. A lady says she's a grandmother and had the same experience at another school, one of the other 15 schools I'd spoken at. I tell the story because, and I'm reminded of the story, because two things. One, opportunity will present itself and everybody has a story like this, regardless of what your business may be or businesses is. Mr. Wallace has built them and put them together and grown them over the years. Everyone has a story they can tell about a moment when the momentum shifted in their favor or when the least likely of circumstances presented itself in a way that looked grim or bleak but turned into something far more positive. We find ourselves in a lot of ways in a unique situation, I should say the unique situation of confronting that as a nation in so many ways today. I was blessed about 6 years ago to have the opportunity to come and speak before graduation exercises here at the school, and I had a chance then. I don't write speeches, but I remember what I talked about that day, as Mr. Weil and Mrs. Weil told me I had to be here a few months ago. I remember saying that one of the challenges for this generation of public policy school graduates is to not be confined or not allow the current dogma and current conversation and current dialogue around public policy and the current alphabet soup of agencies and acronyms for various legislation to limit your thinking about answers to the big public policy problems confronting the nation. That in so many ways, the deregulation, free trade, the fact that the growth and innovation and technology was changing the country and for that matter the world at such a rapid pace that it would take a different kind, a new kind of thinking on the part of public policymakers, and for that matter, every professional, particularly public policymakers, to adjust and address and anticipate challenges and opportunities that will present themselves going forward. So many ways, nothing much has changed. We still confront that same kind of reality as a nation, and for that matter, be it financial regulatory reform, be it health reform, be it education reform, be it the president's most recent announcement about the nation's posture on our with regard to our nuclear weapons. The world has become, or should say, we've become a more global community, and a community that, in large part, depends more on technology today than we did before, and will even more going forward.